is up, everybody. Welcome back to From Genesis to Giraffes, episode 3. I am so excited for this one. This is going to be one of the most fun episodes I was most excited to do. Again, it's just going to be me today as I'm kind of figuring out all this new equipment and new things that I'm doing. It's going to be me again. So yours truly. So sit back, enjoy. And today we get to talk about an animal that probably not a lot of people really know about. And it would probably be surprised by how much it's actually mentioned in the Bible. We have 4 times that the word hyrax is mentioned in the Bible. That's 4 times more than a lot of different species of very famous animals like giraffes and hippos, and one we're going to get into, elephants. So super cool doing all the research of why hyraxes were mentioned so many times in the Bible compared to other species. I'm just really excited to talk about hyrax with you guys. It's an animal that I've worked with at a few different facilities, actually, and they're very unique, and I love the unique guys. And it's going to be really cool to tell you guys all about them. So if you have a minute, I would look up a picture of a hyrax. They're really adorable. They look like little rodents. Honestly, they're like guinea pigs. And there's 5 like commonly recognized species. In zoos, you're going to mostly see the rock hyrax. There's also the yellow-spotted hyrax, the western tree hyrax, southern tree hyrax, and eastern tree hyrax. Basically, with your 5 species, you can break it down into a rock hyrax or a tree hyrax. Rock hyraxes, based on their name, they're going to live mostly by rocks, and your tree hyrax are going to live mostly, well, in the trees. These guys are found only in Africa, so they're in sub-Saharan Africa and parts of the Middle East, which is important when it comes to the Bible, because they are found in Israel and in the Middle East, and where a lot of the writers for the Bible, they would know what a hyrax is. They would be able to see hyrax scurrying across rocks and scurrying across trees. So they know what hyrax are. Another important thing, especially when it's mentioned in the Bible, is that hyraxes, they are herbivorous or herbivores. So they eat greens and they eat lettuce and grasses. I say lettuce like they're going to find lettuce in the wild. I mean, they eat lettuce in zoos. But they are just grass eaters, leaf eaters, and zoos. Yeah, they're going to eat a lot of like browse. What we call browse is just like approved tree leaves that they can eat. They eat lots of hay. They have pellets and things they can eat. Also vegetables, they'll consume that. They love their little sweet potato and carrots. So they're really cute. They're very small. Just, yeah, kind of picture a guinea pig. They do like to live in groups, so you'll mostly see them in groups. And they are very, like most herbivores, are very cautious. They're very cautious around new people. They're very cautious looking out for predators because they're small and little, that they are big prey items for snakes and big things are hawks and eagles. Look out for them. So they're very cautious. A fun thing too about their digestion, so they have unique stomachs where the bacteria, they have bacteria in their stomachs, and that helps break down the tough like plant-based food that they consume. They're not ruminant herbivores with multi-chambered stomachs, like some of your ruminants you would think like cows and stuff, but they use the symbiotic bacteria to digest plant matter, similar to how ruminants would digest food. So they kind of have that look when they're consuming food that mirrors like ruminant behavior. So hyraxes, they have a chewing like behavior called mercialism, which involves them moving their jaws without actually regurgitating or rechewing cud. This behavior misleads them as ruminants, and it actually is described that in the Bible as a ruminant like behavior, at least. And they're not true ruminants, but they do have that behavior of a ruminant. They also, they intake their water. They can live like, I don't know what I'm trying to say. They can live a long time without water. At least they get most of the moisture they want from vegetation that they eat. So yeah, there's a little bit about the anatomy of Hyrax. The most coolest thing to talk about when it comes to Hyrax are what they're related to. So this is what like signage you'll see in zoos and crazy things you'll see is because their rodent-like appearance, their closest living relative is an elephant. So think of a size of a guinea pig, and their closest living relative is an elephant. Wild, absolutely wild. Okay, so why? Why do we know this? Why do we link this together? Well, if you look down in genetically, there's links and molecular evidence that they have shared morphological features, which confirms their like close relationship. They also have old relatives. They are found in a group of mammals that was believed to have been around 50 million years ago. So there's links between them and elephants. Their physical similarities, let's get into that. They have tusks. They have these little teeth that poke out from under their top lip. And so both Hyraxes and elephants, they have their tusks, and that's developed from their incisor teeth. And that's a trait distinct from most other mammals, where tusks originate from canine teeth. They also have toenails. Both the species, elephant and Hyrax, both have toenails. They both have this flattened hoof-like nails on their toes rather than curved claws. And both males of both of these species, they lack a scrotum. And so their testes are located internally. And weirdly enough, their skull structure is actually quite similar. Looking at a skull of an elephant versus a Hyrax, it's actually pretty similar. Just crazy. Super wild. So they're very closely related to each other. So it's really fun looking at the taxonomical tree of Hyrax and how they relate to other mammals. Really cool. Currently, they're in their own order, but very close to elephants, which is just wild. Socially, they're really social, and they're primarily active during the day. And they're known for their poor thermal regulation, so they spend a lot of time resting. They spend a lot of time warming themselves in the sun in the morning and in the evening. And they always are close to a rocky area or a den where they can bolt into if they find a predator. So they're known to be pretty lazy in zoos. They just sit around in the sun. But they're very skittish too. And if they're afraid, they're going to run away right into rocks or a crevice. And they live in very large colonies in the wild, led by usually a dominant male who defends the territory. And they communicate through a whole bunch of vocalizations. And they're kind of have like meerkat behavior where they have a sentry. If you've watched a famous animated meerkat movie about, meerkats and the relationships that they have with warthogs and lions, they have a sentry that looks out for all the other people in their family, animals in their family. And that Hyrax do a similar thing. As all the others are chilling out, resting, soaking up the sun, eating some food, there's going to be one Hyrax that's watching for predators. And if he sees somebody, he's going to call out so everyone can run away and hide and be safe. So that's what a sentry is called, the animal that looks out for everybody. So I think that's everything I wanted to cover about Hyrax. They're diurnal, like I said before, so they hang out in the day. That's important, too, when it comes to how they're mentioned in the Bible. But yeah, let's get into the Bible. Let's do it. All right, so like I mentioned before, Hyrax are mentioned four times in the Bible. Let's go first is Leviticus 11. Now, I'm going to have to do an entire episode on Leviticus 11 by itself, because it's a very... rich text of a ton of animals that are pretty much only mentioned in Leviticus 11. Hyrax is not one of them, but it's mentioned in the Leviticus. And the verse is an NIV version. The Hyrax, though it chews the cud, does not have a divided hoof. It is unclean for you. So basically, it's just talking about what the Israelites were able to eat or not eat. In Deuteronomy 14:7, it's the verse says, "However, of those that chew the cud or that have a divided hoof, you may not eat the hyrax, the rabbit, or the camel. Although they chew the cud, they do not have a divided hoof. They are unclean for you." Then in Psalm 104:18, it says, "The high mountains belong to the wild goats. The crags are a refuge for the hyrax." And then my favorite of the four verses, it is Proverbs 30:26, which is, "Hyraxes are creatures of little power, yet they make their home in the crags." There also are older translations in the King James Version that uses the word coney instead of hyrax, but it means the same thing. And it's referred to the hot rock hyrax, which is, again, what we've already talked about. So let's get into a little bit more of these verses. I think before that, actually, I want to talk about elephants. Because they are so closely related, right? It just begs the question of, why are elephants not mentioned in the Bible? So the Hebrew Old Testament and the New Testament don't mention elephants by name. This may be because elephants were not native to Israel, right? Or they're very uncommon in the everyday world for the biblical writers. Whereas the hyrax, they're going to see every day. They're very common in ancient Israel and the surrounding regions, because they lived in the hills and the crags of Canaan, and they're easy to observe. Like I said, they're diurnal. They're relaxing in the sun. People were going to see them. Whereas the elephants are just not native to Israel or just the surrounding area. They're mostly in right Africa or India, and will probably never encountered by Israelites. And the Old Testament too is written so, like, in the 1400 to 400 BC, which is way before elephants were used commonly in that region for, well, back in the day they were used for war at that time, but that was after the Old Testament was written. And so yeah, they just wouldn't be familiar with elephants, which, doing the research for me, it makes sense. I'm just excited that elephants really aren't in the Bible, because I have a whole elephant agenda. I just don't like them. I get their beauty and their awesomeness, and they're amazing, but I think it comes from being a zookeeper for so long and working at a zoo that had elephants. There's just such a discrepancy between departments, and because elephants are so popular and they need so much, they take so many resources from the zoo, and so the elephant budget to take care of the elephants is way more than any other animal, way more than any other department, that they just suck everything away from other animals that would need resources as well, or would benefit from a good exhibit or updated exhibits, and said most of the money is going to go towards elephants. They're basically, and I compare this a lot, so I went to a big school, right, Michigan State University, and those big schools, all the money seems to go straight to the sports teams and to football and to basketball, because those are the big money makers. Those are what people come to see and that make a lot of money, right? And then your other things, like your STEM and like arts and stuff, they kind of get sidelined and don't get as much money invested into them as the sports teams do. And I call elephants the sports teams of the zoos. They're the football team of the zoo. They're gonna suck up all the money because that's what people come to see. So that's my opinions on elephants. I still love them, but I love that hyrax are in the Bible and that elephants are not. It's just awesome. So again, just to highlight everything, right, hyrax, they're a common local animal, so they're going to be mentioned in the Bible because they that's what the writers are used to. They are taken from their everyday experience, so they're seeing a hyrax. They're like, all right, I know a hyrax. I can put that in the Bible. I'm going to relate it to this thing. An elephant, it's exotic. It's foreign. They don't know much about it at all. So, boom, shakalaka. Let's go back to the meaning, right? So, when I mentioned Leviticus 11:5 and Deuteronomy 14:7, these two verses are basically just about the dietary law, calling hyrax unclean for consumption, which just reflects the ritual purity, not necessarily health or moral issues, but just being pure for the Lord, how it was in the Old Testament based on how you ate. It's a good example of how ancient Israelites categorized animals based on observable traits, right, like the chewing motions, even though the hyrax are not an actual ruminant. They're based on just the observable traits. And then in Psalm 104:18, which again is the high mountains belong to the wild goats, the crags are a refuge for the hyrax, this highlights God's provision for all creatures. The hyrax is small and vulnerable, right? Think again like a little guinea pig, but it finds refuge in the rocky places, which is a really poetic image of the divine care, that God cares for those that are weak, like a little hyrax. And again, then is is even more highlighted in Proverbs 30:26, and this is where we're going to camp out for a little bit. So the author of this verse of Proverbs 30 is Agur, and in this he has, I think it's pretty famous, but he lists four wise small creatures, and the four species listed, and this is the first one that we're going to be talking about on this podcast, but later on we're going to talk about the other three. So the other three are the ant, the locust, and the lizard, and then of course he mentions the hyrax. In this verse, the hyrax's wisdom is in recognizing its limits, and it chooses protection instead of pride. It chooses to live by rocks where it's protected. And in ancient Israel, hyraxes were well known for their harmless nature and their lack of defensive strength. Like I said, they're just going to run if they're scared. They're not fast, they're not fierce, and they're not strong. The rocky cliffs that they live by, they're secure, they're elevated, they're hard to reach, they're perfect refuge for a little small animal. In Africa, these areas are called kopjes or kopjes, and you would see those in a lot of zoos do kopje exhibits, and they usually will have hyrax then, because the hyrax like to live in those rocky crevices because they can run to it, and that's their safety. And they don't fight battles. They run. They hide in the rocks. And I think the Bible uses the hyrax here as a metaphor for wisdom. And even though the hyrax is weak, it survives by choosing a secure home, a secure base. I think it suggests that the wisdom isn't about strength, but about knowing where to find safety. Which immediately points us to God as a rock, as a refuge. Right? Like, God is our kopje. He should be where we're running to for security. And for strength, that's where we get our wisdom from. That's where we get our strength from. God values the wisdom over the strength. Hyrax, they're not going to fight right away, but they know that there is something bigger than them. They know that there's something greater than them that can protect them, and they run to it. And that's what we should be doing, is running to God for his strength and protection. I think that's really cool. I think there's a lot that we can learn from hyrax. It's really cool because they choose the right foundation. They're not running to a sandcastle, but they're running to rocks for protection. It's amazing. And I think just to wrap it up, right, like there is wisdom that we can find in hyrax, and it's they're small and they're weak, yet they're wise. And they are a symbol, I think, of that wisdom, like we mentioned, and just God's care for everybody. Even for the seemingly insignificant hyrax, he provides for them. He provides rocks for them to hide in. And we can rely and lean on him to run to him. I really reflect then on Psalm 18:2, which says, "The Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my deliverer." Our true strength is not in ourselves, but it's where or in whom we take refuge. Colossians 3:3 says, "Your life is now hidden with Christ in God." That we run to God He should be our fortress and is that rock that we live on. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that from a little Hyrax, we can have this symbol of running to God and running to the Creator and running to a strong foundation that is always there and isn't moving, never budges, always there. Amazing. All right, well, thank you everybody for giving this episode a listen. I hope you learned something. I hope you gained something from it. And I hope it was just a good time. Just want to shout out Ben Wells for making the music that you're maybe tapping your foot to right now. It's a banger. You did an awesome job. It is the new sound for From Genesis to Giraffe. So thank you, Ben. Really appreciate it, man. Also, just want to remind everybody to write a review for me. That does help the show grow. And also just give it a like or a follow and on whatever site or platform you're using to listen to right now. But everybody have a blessed week. Let's go.